Amen. Hey, can we thank Pete and just this team for what they do, for putting this together? No.
Okay.
Sorry. So that was good. Pete asked me, hey, do you have something really important that I needed you to have? And I said, nope, absolutely not. That was a joke for the 3.5 people. So let me get technology up here, excuse me. I want to appreciate who lived in the northeast part of the country sometime after high school. Who are my friends? I saw a bunch of people go to the northeast. Just curious, where were you? Really? Oh, that sounds like a story. Where were you guys? Boston. Yeah. Gino. Jersey. Ocean City, New Jersey, one of my favorite places. Whoa, way in the back. You're just waving. Where were you?
Boston.
Oh, another Boston. Did you guys know each other?
Yeah.
No, okay. It's a small town. It's a small town. Yeah, where else? D.C. Oh, thank you for serving our nation. We really appreciate you. Joe, I'm going to try and get this set up here. So bear with me, guys. It's the beauty of technology. External headphones. Joe, you tell me if I'm doing it right, okay? Something happened? Beautiful. Well, It's okay. It's part of the magic. I really have been excited to be here, and it was fun. I got to my cabin early yesterday, and just to look at the list of names and just to read every name and pray over you guys. And I want to say thank you, because I know a lot of you guys have been praying for me. You pray for this weekend. There are Family Fest veterans in this room. So first timer, I've never gotten to come here. Pete's never invited me to actually just come as a guest, only to speak. So I appreciate that. So I'm in the first timer club, but I want to just take a gauge of the room. Who's been here 3 or more times? 5 or more times? 7 or more times, 10 or more times, 15 or more times. First timers, I ask that because look around the room. What's cool is when you come to something like this, you're actually part of a little community, which is actually really cool. And I like the word community because you break it down and it's 2 words. It's common unity. And what's really fun is when people come together like this, you realize even if we're first timers, we have a lot in common with these people. And we share this great unity and we build these relationships, get to know one another. And just a lot of people in here are like, you know what? The number one thing in common we have is we're up here at Grandview. We're here with our kids. It's going to be a great weekend and we love Jesus. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So I want to start. Pete told you some things about me. But I'm going to tell you more. He told you my name, and he told you what I do for work, and those are the things that, you know, we do as adults as we trade, like, mental business cards. But I'm going to give you a little bit more about myself. Missed a slide. Hold on. All right, so here's 6 random things about me. Hi. That was so uncomfortable. I literally turned around. You could not have been closer. My goodness. All right, 6 random things about myself. Let's start in the middle. Let's do the map game. I appreciate that Pete started with that. I was born on the left coast in Oceanside, California. Where are you, my friend? From Fallbrook. We met. You grew up in the town where I was born. I only lived there for about 3 or 4 months. My dad was in the service. It was at Camp Pendleton. Then my mom, they got a divorce. That's a whole other story. I'm going to touch on that later this weekend. She moved me to New York. So my New Yorkers... Where are you? Where, New York? You guys came from the furthest? Did anybody come from further than New York? Okay, I've got you beat in a second. So I was born on the left coast, raised on the right coast, but then literally I turned 50 this last week. Thank you. I'm up to 7.5 people. That's great. This is my 25th anniversary of living in Minnesota. Exactly half of my life, which is very weird when I talk to my parents. They're like, you are so not a New Yorker anymore. You're literally, they look at me like, you're not one of us. You have betrayed us and left the family. So, and I was raised by my mom, Jenny, top left. All right, single mom, only child. Explains a lot, as you'll see this weekend. But bottom right, that's me and my wife, Ashley. And that was fall of 1999. So this year we get to celebrate 25 years. What's up, babe? And that was the beginning. And what did it turn into? Top middle. There we are. That's our family. Will and Abby, 22-year-old twins. Ryan and Haley, 19-year-old twins. So that's our family. So my wife is here, Ashley. Wave, Ashley. She loves when I do this. My daughter, Abby, 22, is here. Okay, Abby's loving the attention. My daughter, Haley, who traveled the furthest from San Diego for this. Yeah, no pressure, Dad. And her boyfriend, Colin, from Ohio. So we just near and far. I mean, you guys got a pretty decent. You guys got to 9.5 people are in your court. So you're winning. So that's my family. In the bottom left, that stands for Syracuse, New York. That's the town I was raised in. I have so much pride in where I'm from, as a lot of us do. And then the bottom right, that's just a freebie. It's a free-for-all. My favorite sport is soccer. I did not grow up playing it. I grew up playing basketball and lacrosse. But because of my kids, as you can see, three of them play for Bethel. And all of our kids played soccer growing up. It just became my favorite thing. And the bottom right, that's my favorite team. Tottenham from London, they're playing right now. I asked Pete to move club. He said no. And I don't want any score spoilers, all right? Now, those are just some things about me. And when I think about, if you pick out 5 or 6 random facts about yourself, it's probably pretty hard that somebody could duplicate and say, oh, I've got exactly all 6 of those. But just in case somebody has all 6, born in California, raised in New York, single mom, only child, married an amazing woman, moved to Minnesota, spent half his life here, has 2 sets of twins. Here's the kicker. I've got something really weird, like a weird mental thing that I do that I can't stop doing it that makes me, I think, 1 literally in 8 billion. Whatever we're up to, 1 in 8 billion, I think I'm 1 in 8 billion. You have weird things about you too. You know you do. Look at your spouse because you're thinking it right now. You know that weird thing? So here's what I do, and this is me being vulnerable, all right? I trust you not to judge me. I subtract letters and words from each other. So what I do is, starting in 4th grade, I was playing alone on the playground, and it sounds really sad. I played kickball like every day, but there was this one day I vividly remember. I was alone on the playground, and I was naturally good at math. And in my head, I was like, well, the letter A is number 1. The letter Z is number 26. So in theory, you could subtract A from Z. 26 minus 1 is 25. So for example, if you take just 2 random letters, C is number 3, U is number 21. Therefore, the distance between C and U is? That's great. Good morning, math. But then I leveled up. By about 6th grade, I'm like, well, what if you put words together and you put them on top of each other? So 2 simple words, cat and dog. So you've got, they all have a number value, and then if you put the big numbers on top, D to C, A to O, G to T, you're smiling. You're like, this dude's straight up weird. You are looking at me? Absolutely. So you get a 1, a 14, and a 13, but then I'm like, if I put a comma in there, then it's 11,413 is the difference between cat and dog. I do it. Does he do it? No. You're looking at him like he does it. I'm like, I ain't never met somebody that does this. It is the weirdest thing. Started in 4th grade, and I do it all the time in my head. So, what is it? Brock? Nice to meet you, Brock. And I'm going to look for another 5-letter name. Susan. 173,423. I do it all the... Oh, wait till I get the big words. So I do it all the time. And you can feel free to test me, and the beauty is you won't know if it's the right answer. You're going to be like, all right. All right, that was pretty impressive. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn to someone next to you, because think of what makes you unique. Beyond where I grew up, beyond where I was born, what's something that you're like, it even makes me like a little bit weird. But we can go there, because remember, you're now a part of a common unity, you're part of a community. So go ahead, share that one thing that makes you super unique. Oh, this is an all play. Go ahead. Make sure both of you get to share. All right, why don't you go ahead and wrap that up? Now, this is like a really weird group. They're like getting into it. All right, here's what I want to know. Y'all aren't weird. I'm sorry. All right. Hey, kids in Florida. Florida, come on back. I mean, Florida, of course, Florida is acting this way. Come on. All right. Who heard? I'm not going to ask you to share it. You don't have to. Who heard something pretty darn unique that you didn't know about the person next to you? You did. I'm not going to ask you to share it. Don't worry. Every one of us has something or many things that make us incredibly unique. And what's funny is I think the more our uniqueness gets beat out of us. I mean that. I think the more we are likely to forget just how unique we are and just how uniquely God made us and wired us. For example, what do we do as adults to determine our uniqueness and our difference from one another? Assessments. How many of you have taken a personality or a profile or a professional assessment to make you better at your job and help you work with your coworkers and be more productive? We've done it. All right, so here we go. Working genius. I am a galvanizing tenacity, assertive driver. I'm not sure I even like that phrase. Enneagram. I'm almost exactly a 7 and a 3. 7, entertaining optimist. 3, successful achiever. Strengths finder. I'm a maximizer, woo, communication arranger, belief. And a Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENFJ or the protagonist. The older we get, the more I think this is what we decide makes us unique. And it's less and less about, man, like, how did God uniquely make me, wire me, create me, that I am beautifully unique, but way better than StrengthsFinder 2.0. Because we'll do this 15 or 75-minute online assessment. You can even do it on an app on your phone. That ain't going to tell you anything about who you really are and what you were created for, because we were created for so much more than that. See, I think we forget that we are the beautiful creation of a good, loving, very creative creator God. We forget it. And I love thinking about creation because obviously in the mission of Young Life, in case you don't know Young Life, we work with teenagers. And I get to speak to teenagers. In fact, I'm just going to tell you straight up, a lot of things I'm going to share this weekend are things I share with teenagers because they're simple truths that we still need to hear because all of you are teenagers. In fact, some of you still act like teenagers. And if you do, praise God, don't lose it. But I think we forget how unique and beautiful our Creator is. And I like to think of our God in the biggest and biggest of creation in the smallest and smallest. So let's start human brain. Let's get minute. In your brain are 100 billion nerve cells that are firing constantly so that you can process, reason, and learn. And I know we're in this new era of AI, but man, AI, that's a man-made creation. There is nothing cooler than what's happening right now in your brain. 100 billion nerve cells. Then we can go to the big, big, big. This was taken with the Webb telescope. Was that 2 summers ago that these images came out? So our scientists can now see 13.8 unfathomable billion years away into the galaxy. This is only, I don't know, 10, 20 million light years away. Did I say you're 13.8 billion light years away is how far they can see. And the scientists have said, that's not like the end, obviously. It's only because our technology can only help us see that far. So in our culture, when we look at creation, and I look at something like this, do you see an accident or do you see artwork? Because that is something I would want hanging on my wall. I see artwork when I look in creation. And what I love is, look at where you are. Real quick, look out the windows. You're going to get the opportunity to be in God's creation. And I just want to plant that seed as you're walking around. Enjoy God's creation. Because if you look for God, He will show up. And God's creation is also sitting right next to you. Because you're part of a common unity. If you look for God in one another, I promise you, He will show up and surprise you. But in case we forget just how gorgeous and beautiful this world is that our God gave us, I just want to level set us with a short video. Sorry, Joe. Thanks, Joe. All the time I forget the beauty and the majesty of our good, loving, creative Creator. I forget it all the time. I forget it when I am in Edina, Minnesota. I forget it when I'm up here in Nisswa, Minnesota. I forget it when I go home to New York. I forget it when I go visit my daughter in California. I forget it when I'm at work. We forget just how amazing and beautiful our good, loving, creative Creator is. But I also forget it when I just, it's not when I look there, I forget it when I look at me. You ever look in the mirror and maybe you just pause a little bit longer and you ask some of those big questions that you don't bring anybody else in on? Am I good enough? Do I have what it takes? Am I up to par? What do people really think about me? What does my future look like? I mean, like, does God really care about the trivial stuff of my life? Because I know I do. And there it is. Thank you for fixing that. Psalm 139 is a passage that a lot of us know, and it's beautiful, and it speaks to creation. You made all of the delicate inner parts of my body, and you knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous, and how well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment laid out before a single day had passed. How precious are your thoughts about me, O God. They cannot be numbered. I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand, and when I wake up, you are still with me. Do we live life like this, knowing that, taking joy in the creation in us that He has made? Because what I love about this passage is it speaks to a God who is not distant, but who is intimately close. And I remember especially when I was younger and I would read this passage, I was really just impressed and impacted by like the creation piece and like to be knit together. But over time, I drifted towards the latter half of that passage, the idea of God's thoughts about you outnumber the grains of sand. Do you ever think about the fact that you are on God's mind? He didn't just create you and set you loose. You are actively on God's mind. He cherishes his perfect creation, but still we struggle with our purpose. The what did God create me for? What I love is in Colossians 1, it speaks to it because God didn't leave it up to us to figure out. 1:15, Jesus is the visible image of the invisible God. You want to know what God is like, how God would act, talk, walk, interact? Look at the life of Jesus. But then in the next verse, it says, all things were created both in him and for him. Our identity and our purpose is to uniquely be found in God. And I'm going to bring out this pot. I'm going to use it a couple times this weekend. It's just an example. You know, what I think is interesting, I am not a potter. I did not create this. But I did take pottery in art class in high school. Did any of you ever have to take an art class? Are any of you active potters? Like you do pottery artwork? No? Okay. What I love about pottery is, first, there's this huge lump of clay. And I remember in art class, and then you'd shave off a huge chunk of it. And then you'd throw it down on the wheel, and then you'd start doing the foot thing, and then you'd get water on your hands, and you'd start to mold, and you'd start to sculpt, and then you'd pull, and you'd tuck, and eventually you would yank it, and you would form it into what you thought maybe it could be or would do. Like, a potter would create their artwork to serve a purpose, maybe to hold flowers, maybe to hold water, maybe just to be decorative, maybe for food, for washing. But it was created with a purpose. And in John 10:10, one of my favorite verses, it says that we were created, Jesus came to give us life and life to the full. This was the most impactful verse in my whole faith story at age 21. The idea of my purpose was to be, yes, created by God, but to created to be filled by God, and not just filled to the brim, but filled to overflowing. This beautiful idea of life and life to the full. And a lot of our world doesn't know life to the full. And a lot of us, even sometimes, we struggle with, gosh, what would life to the full look like? Because I just can't even imagine it. I'm going to ask a lot of questions this weekend. They're not meant to come at you. They're just meant to make us think. Questions move relationships forward. I'll speak about that again later this weekend. So first question, and I know it's hard, a hard one. What gives you fulfillment? What makes you full, feel most full in your life? A mentor of mine once said, everybody's filling their life with something. Everyone. But what gives you fulfillment? So this weekend, I want to look just at the life of Jesus as we consider what fulfillment looks like. Again, this perfect reflection, this visible image of the invisible God. To remember and see God's love for us, his perfect love for us in our uniqueness and in our brokenness. And Pete, when he said, Andy, when I want you to come, I want you to be you. I want you to speak as you speak. And I know you speak to teenagers. And again, that's where I said, when we in Young Life, we speak to teenagers, we focus like laser focus on the life of Christ. So why not do that this weekend? And I want to look at how Jesus interacts with very normal people, ordinary people. People just like you and I, to see what we can learn and understand both, yes, about our creation, how we are designed for relationship with him, including how we look at these interactions and how they display and show both sin and the beauty of the cross and what a life with Christ looks like, even in the midst of our ordinariness. When we look in the mirror and we say, I just don't see it. I don't feel up to it. I don't feel worthy. Because we all know and play that game in our head. And as we tell these stories and look at these people, my ask of you is, I want you to look for yourself in the story. Because you are in every single one of these interactions that Jesus is having with ordinary people. It's not about them. It's actually about us. And this first one, I want to look. It's one of the first stories. It's in the book of John. And Jesus is on a walk. And that's where this story starts. And he's going to invite his two first friends or disciples to join him. So the background is Jesus isn't on the scene yet. This is when Jesus is 30 years old from a very ordinary town, Nazareth, Bethlehem. Born of two very ordinary parents, Mary and Joseph, with a very ordinary job, carpenter. And here he is on the scene, and that's where it picks up. In verses 35 and 36, it says, one day John the Baptist was standing with two of his disciples. As Jesus walked by, John looked at him and declared, you guys, look, see that? There goes the Son of God. So a lot of people would have seen Jesus as just another ordinary guy, basic upbringing, basic job, really nothing special. But John the Baptist says, no, you got to understand, that's the Son of God. So even though Jesus may have looked ordinary, obviously the circumstances of his birth were extraordinary. Love the phrase, I don't know the author, said Jesus was God with flesh and feelings and a heartbeat. I just think that's precious. Another author that I really love, Paul David Tripp, he said, when Jesus entered the world, it was the radical intervention of the incarnation of Jesus that became our only hope. Jesus' entry into the world, but then his entry into our world is our only hope. And we see this radical intervention again and again through Jesus' interactions with beautiful people in the Gospels. So verse 37, when John's two disciples heard this, they followed Jesus. The word followed is a loaded word. There is so much in followed. Now, it sounds kind of weird because these two guys, they were followers, students of John the Baptist. But it says they left John and they started to follow Jesus, which I think is both really beautiful. And in my mind, I'm also like, that's kind of creepy because they just start like, following him wherever he goes. I don't like being followed. I would be looking over my shoulder the whole time at these two strangers that are tailing me. Be like, what is going on with these guys? Second hard question. We already talked about fulfillment. What are the things that we follow? So many things are begging us to follow it, follow him, follow her. What do we call it on social media? Follow. Chase after all the time. Verse 38, Jesus looked around and he saw them following. What do you want? He asked them. And they replied, Teacher, where are you staying? I love that Jesus asks an open-ended question. I don't know how I would have handled that situation if I was being followed because I would have felt threatened. But Jesus, I don't picture him as saying, what do you want? What do you want? I don't picture it intimidating. I picture Jesus being more like, hey guys, what do you want? Open-handed, open-ended. He's allowing them literally to ask anything. And they said, hey, we just want to see where you're staying. If Jesus asked you, hey, what is it that you want? What would you say? How would you respond? They say, where are you staying? And Jesus says, come and see. It was about 4 in the afternoon when they went with him to the place where he was staying, and they remained with him the rest of the day. Come and see. Three beautiful words. Jesus is saying, I want to spend time with you. Sounds like Psalm 139. God has thoughts about you. Jesus is saying, come and see. And they spent the rest of the day together. And man, would I love to know what they did, what they talked about. But what I love is they were curious. They didn't have to go. They could have said, no, you just tell us. That way we'll know, and then we'll go back to John. But then they said, no, let's go with him. We want to lean in on Jesus. These guys were fishermen. Again, ordinary jobs. But what I love is, in spite of their ordinariness, maybe in culture, and it was just a normal job, I love Jesus says, I see you, you matter, and I want to spend time with you. I love the word curious, because we see it again and again and again in the Gospels, that people were curious about Jesus. They wanted to see where he was going. They wanted to see where what he was going to do, sometimes for good, and sometimes also with bad intentions in their mind, their curiosity. But I'm going to show a short clip from the most spiritual TV show ever made, Ted Lasso. And I love, because it speaks to curiosity. It's the end of season one. Remember, I love soccer. Have any of us watched the show? I just want to gauge. Okay, good. 9.5 of us again. It's the show about the American football coach transported over to London, takes over a Premier League football team, soccer team. It's the fish out of water story. Ted's totally goofy, and he's got all these one-liners. But at the end of season one, he's the soccer coach, and there's the antagonist. His name is Rupert. They're in a high-stakes game of darts, and basically whoever wins will stay with the club and the other one will back away. And Ted is down basically to his last throw, and again, if he loses, he'll no longer be the club, and the antagonist basically gets the club. But just listen to the interaction and as it speaks to curiosity.
Mate, what do I need to win?
2 triple 20s and a bullseye.
Good luck.
You know, Rupert, guys have underestimated me my entire life. And for years, I never understood why. It used to really bother me. But then one day, I was driving my little boy to school, and I saw this quote by Walt Whitman. It was painted on the wall there. It said, be curious, not judgmental. And I like that. So I get back in my car, and I'm driving to work. And all of a sudden, it hits me. All them fellas that used to belittle me, not a single one of them were curious. You know, they thought they had everything all figured out, and so they judged everything, and they judged everyone. And I realized that they're underestimating me. Who I was had nothing to do with it. Because if they were curious, they would ask questions. You know? Questions like, have you played a lot of darts, Ted? Which I would have answered, yes, sir. Every Sunday afternoon at a sports bar with my father from age 10 until I was 16 when he passed away. Barbecue sauce.
I remember, it is a good scene, isn't it? It just makes you feel good. The music, Jason Sudeikis, the whole thing. But I remember the first time I saw it, I thought there was something so beautiful and so simple about what does it look like to be curious? Because as adults, I think we forget our uniqueness, and I think we also lose some of that curiosity. And what's fun in a weekend like this is you get to watch your kids' curiosity run wild. And when you see it, celebrate it. It's like that's just some of that God spark in them. But I'd encourage us, what does it look like to continue to lean in again and again on the life of Jesus, to continue to be curious, even if there's stories in the Gospels that we've heard so many times? How do I, at my age and stage, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, continue to be curious? My grandmother passed away a year ago at the age of 101. And when I went to visit her when she was still in her own apartment at the age of 98, I visited her. Which is just amazing, right? She was a realtor until age 90. Right? Man. She was the first lady of Fayetteville. Oh, just gave me a moment. All right. But when I went to visit her at age 98, you know, I asked her kind of what she did during the day, and her TV didn't work anymore. Otherwise, she would have watched the news, and, you know, she would have done that. But TV didn't work, and she didn't care, so she sat in her chair, her golden rocking chair, and next to it was a table and stacked with two Bibles, multiple devotionals, like the little Our Daily Breads and other devotionals written by authors. And I said, "So, Grandma, what do you do?" And she said, "I pretty much sit here and pray. I read." And then she blew me away. She said, "I am learning and growing so much in my faith." 98, y'all. I feel like at some point there's like, I did it. Like, I should tap out. Like, I've arrived. I've done it. But our good, loving, creative creator is just full of surprises that bring us along. And if we're curious enough to see them, we will just see his beauty in our lives and in us. What's the biggest surprise you've ever had in your life? Now, for some of us, we're going straight to a great thing. Oh my gosh, like, it was the best surprise ever. Andy, if you'd have been there, and some of us are also thinking, well, my surprise wasn't that great. The word surprise, again, it can be loaded. But I want to share the biggest surprise by far of my life was the day Ashley and I found out we were having our first set of twins. So here we are, our ages and stages, Disney World, happiest place on earth, right? Ashley was about 20 weeks pregnant. We'd been to multiple doctor's appointments, and we'd had the ultrasound. You know, we'd had the sonogram. So you get out Mr. Microphone, you look for, you know, the heartbeat, and once they get it, they're like, "Oh, you hear that? Such a strong heartbeat. Oh, you guys, this is wonderful." And we're going like, "This is great. We're so excited. First time parents, one heartbeat." And the microphone was over here. We go back for another, and this is all hindsight. We go back for another appointment in another couple weeks. They actually put the microphone over here, and one heartbeat. So now we get all the way, and we'd had multiple appointments. We get to our after 20-week ultrasound, and this is when, you know, we finally get to see your baby, and they're going to ask you, do you want to know the sex of your baby? And we're having all these conversations, baby, singular, baby. And so we're talking about it, and we're like, "I don't know, do we want to? It's going to be amazing. We get to meet him or her." And so we're in the room. They put Ashley on the table. You know, the blue jelly, the goop? Yep, the goop. That's the official word. And then they get out the camera. And I just remember, you know, for parents, maybe you look at that for the first time. You're like, "I have no idea what I'm seeing, but it's beautiful. It's just like the snowy television." And on the screen came up this image. Now, you only know what it is because I told you we had twins. But Ashley and I are looking at this like, "What is it?" You know, just have no idea. But she pauses and she clicks. And this is how we found out we were having not one baby but two. This woman, and we had never met her before. She wasn't our doctor. She was the ultrasound technician. And then she would go show the results and the doctor would come in. And she looks at us and she goes, "Hey guys, they're your two heads." Whoops. Those are our two heads. And she just circles them and goes, "There's your two heads." You guys, the room, it was tense. Ashley, let's be honest, I was more focused on me. What I remember about my sweet wife, I mean, I was like, I got my own issues going on here. But Ashley, I just remember her laughing and crying, and it was this mixture of beautiful noises that you can only make all at once when you're totally caught off guard. That's what I remember. Again, I was more focused on me. And I stood up out of my chair. You're going to be the ultrasound technician, okay? And I go, "It's twins? It's twins? It's twins?" And this woman responds with, you guys didn't know you were having twins?" And I'm like, "Ma'am, I'm sorry. She is having a whole situation over here with the noises and the laughing and the crying." And I am now like 3 inches from your face. Is this a rational response of a man who just, who knows he's having twins? I'd never felt more emotion in my life. Blessing, joy, fear, like terror, excitement. It just like running through all these thoughts. It felt electric. It was amazing. It was a beautiful, beautiful surprise. And I believe our God is full of surprises. The second time, blew us out of the water too. You can ask me. That'll be a freebie on the side. We couldn't believe it. But what I love about our Lord is he invites us to be surprised. He invites us to come and see. Open-ended questions. What do you want? He invites us to follow. Follow me. Be surprised. Be curious. The older we get, I think the less we forget who we are as beautiful creations of God. And I think the more we lose that curiosity. I want to be Gene Arbogast sitting in the chair at age 98 saying, holy cow, I can't believe how much I am learning and how much I'm growing in my faith. Hard question, private question. Only you know the true state of your heart coming in this weekend. Some of you are so excited to be here. You have been planning. It's been on the calendar. And just by the sheer number, I know that there are some people in here that are like, there are so many places I'd rather be. I don't know if I really signed up for this. I'm here to, you know, we got to do the friend thing and we got to come as a family. I get that. Like whether that's a church and sometimes that's work and sometimes it's go out and hang out with friends. What's the state of your heart this weekend? And my ask would be, would you just lean in? However your heart is coming in, lean in. Just be 100% present with your kids. See the beauty of God in their curiosity and hear it in their laughter. See the beauty of God in the conversations with your friends. Old, for those who've been in the room 15 years, and new, who've been in the room for about 17 hours. Because surprises are in store for you here this weekend. I know it. Whenever we put ourselves intentionally in a position where God is going to be, God shows up and there's surprises in store. So one last question, and it's actually more of an assignment. Later today, you're going to have the opportunity. Remember I talked about the mirror and I said we ask ourselves sometimes hard private questions in the mirror. Later today, when you're even if it's at the end of the night and you're brushing your teeth, just look in the mirror, and I'm just going to ask you, here's your homework assignment. Say, you're an awesome creation of a good, loving, creative creator. Don't let the hard questions come. Just say, you are the good, loving creation of a good, loving, creative creator. Uniquely made with a purpose to be filled with him. I'm excited to have the opportunity to share with you this weekend. I would love to get to know some of you this weekend, especially my friends from New York. It's going to be a lot of fun. So dive in, and I hope you have a great day. Can I pray for us? Jesus, thank you for the gift of one day. One day at a time is pretty much all that we can handle. But we thank you that we get to be in a beautiful place with amazing people. Lord, I pray for a day that would be full of surprises. I pray for a weekend that would be full of surprises, and that in it we would clearly get to see more of you, see you more intimately, in the places and spaces where we might not expect it. In your name, Jesus, amen.